chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm really happy to be back with you. We all survived, at least everyone listening tonight survived the nasty terror attack that took place over in Orlando, Florida. Horrible tragedy went on over there, and there's been huge discussion going on across social media. And, you know, it's a lot of the stuff that we always kind of hear. You know, immediately you hear Hillary Clinton calling for a ban on assault rifles, and you hear Donald Trump calling for a ban on all Muslims. But the truth of the matter is it's a lot more complicated, and in other ways it's a lot more simple than we'd like to think about it. And tonight we're going to break that all down, and we're going to be talking about this topic of terrorism and all the different aspects of, you know, what drives it, where it comes from, why is it happening, you name it. I've got an awesome panel together tonight for you on Anti-Media Radio. But make sure you check us out 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, a bunch of different shows. I'm here with my panel Monday and Wednesday. I can't speak tonight for some reason. SM Gibson on Tuesdays and Thursdays, LaVon on Fridays, a bunch of different perspectives, a bunch of different guests. We're going to have some guests on Wednesday talking about some awesome solutions. We're going to be working on getting some of the presidential candidates on our show. We've already had a couple of them. We had a vice presidential candidate just a couple weeks ago from the Libertarian Party, last week actually. And so we've got some exciting things going on. That being said, let me introduce my panel. We've got my longtime co-host on the line, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Hey, not much, man. Just kind of tired of seeing the sideshow of a circus we call our world right now, I guess.
It definitely is a circus, especially after terror attacks go on. And these have become kind of commonplace. They go on every year. We've got some kind of terror attack or some kind of mass shooting or something going on. And, you know, there's always fingers being pointed. But, you know, like almost everything else, no one's ever talking about the underlying issues here. It's always the symptom, the band-aid that we can put over top of the symptom. How can we, you know, not really talk about why this kind of stuff is happening? And, you know, it's just a repeat story over and over. It's going on. Let me get through the rest of these panel members. We've got a packed house tonight. We're going to also try to take some calls. I know a lot of people have some opinions out there that they're going to want to be voiced. I who knows, we may get some trolls tonight too, I have a feeling. We've got our amazing journalist on the line, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Not much. Feeling about the same as DB. depressing times.
Cheer up, you guys. You guys are bringing me down right now.
Well, it'd be one thing if they didn't politicize it all the time. That's the thing.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the moment something goes on, it's politicized.
Yeah, this is what happens. This is part of our reactive culture. They have it set up in such a way that they can keep us in a state of terror, and it's a state of hopelessness, really, is what it is. that they have us, the national security state since 9/11, it's been like this. It's been set up so that we're in a perpetual state of fear and feeling like we can't do anything to stop it. So it's kind of a, paradigm.
What we can do to stop it, they're legislating taking away right now.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is the fear factor is what really is really what gets picked up and carried after any kind of atrocity or disaster or terror attack or shooting, anything that goes on like that. It's like, immediately it's fear, pick up the fear. And like, the saying goes is that if you could keep people in fear, it's really easy to mend their attitudes and kind of get them to accept things that they normally wouldn't accept. The perfect case study for this is 9/11. I mean, after 9/11, everyone was in fear. I remember being like I think I was like a freshman in high school when it happened. And, I saw it on TV in the morning. My parents would watch CNN or something like that, and I woke up and I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe this is going on. I'm too afraid to go to school today. Honestly, I was like, I wasn't really that afraid, but I just didn't want to go to school. But the truth of the matter was, is that a lot of people were really afraid and scared. And shortly after 9/11, the Patriot Act got jammed through, and that's something that was already waiting in the wings. They were just waiting for the opportune moment to pass something like the Patriot Act. And 9/11 provided the cover for them to do it. And everyone was more than willing and more than happy to accept it. Also joining us tonight, we've got another one of our amazing journalists on the line, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. I'm not depressed. I'm actually more interested in the kind of crazy propaganda and like the reactions people are having. This is all very interesting and typical, of course.
Well, it's good news that you're not depressed, and I'm not either. But we got to be really careful about countering the narrative that's going to be coming out here, and we're already seeing it being kind of rolled out on a pretty massive level. I mean, Trump, I guess Trump takes the cake. He was over there congratulating himself. I mean, that to me was just the most ridiculous, heartless thing that I saw come out of this terror attack, is Trump over there literally saying, well, thank you guys for applauding me and my being right. It's just insane. Claire, I'm going to come back to you.
I don't think that was the worst. I think the worst was, I believe, the lieutenant governor of Texas, who basically said, you reap what you sow. I think that was the worst.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see some of these Islamic fundamentalists and Christian, quote unquote, Christian evangelicals kind of coming together on this topic, because they're so different, right? Anyway, Claire, we're going to come back to you for our first story of the night, because you wrote an amazing article today that we're going to talk about. First, I want to also introduce Manny Aguilar, who's joining us on the show. What's up, Manny?
Thank you, Nick. How you doing, Claire? How you doing, DV? How you doing, Jake?
Hey, Manny.
Just basically want to say, like, it really is. I'm glad, there's an activist on the phone like myself here, because, you can bring in all your candidates.
Manny, sorry to interrupt you. We got to speak up a little bit. We can't hear you that well.
Okay. I just wanted to say this. Could that you see it from an activist side? And from an activist side, the deal is, shame on those hypocrites that are now, supposed to be saying, oh, what happened in Orlando, blah, 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 and all that. They didn't give a shit about the gay community, a lot of these people. And they're, all of a sudden, it's like Muhammad Ali. They didn't give a shit about him, but all of a sudden he died. Everybody's on the bandwagon. I don't mind the people that are really suffering from this loss, like myself, that I've been an ally to the gay community for a long time, stuff like that. So those hypocrite people, if you're going to mourn for these people, start mourning for everybody across the board. The bottom line, there's people dying in Mexico, there's people dying in Palestine, there's people dying everywhere. Then where's the outcry and stuff like that, So a lot of these hypocrites, they get on the bandwagon, screw you, basically. A second thing, too, is, all this hate that Trump is bringing aboard and stuff like that, as an activist, I'm getting tired of our sisters and brothers from, you know, Muslim brothers and sisters, I should say, that are getting blamed for this. They're always blaming that, you know, if it ain't the Mexican or the Native American or the Black or the, you know, Mocha brothers, they always got to blame somebody, stuff like that. So I just want people to stop, you know, basically, you know, dividing ourselves more than that. Now, as far as assault weapons and stuff like that, you know, we have to get, you know, we have to fight the government, and they got all the weapons and stuff like that. But the bottom line, too, is you're not going to solve the problem by weapons, because everybody will sell weapons to you. And illegal or legally, you can get a weapon pretty much anywhere and stuff like that. You know, stuff like that. So that's not going to solve the problem. The problem is going to be solved by creating love and unity. That's exactly what's going to solve the problem. Thank you.
Exactly, man, and great point. I mean, banning guns, it'll do exactly what banning drugs did in the drug war. Absolutely nothing, besides maybe creating a bunch of more criminals, but it doesn't lower the amount of drugs being used or the amount of drug dealers or the amount of drug trafficking or any of that stuff.
Think about the power that gangs would have. I mean, they're not going to stop.
If you ban guns, I mean, exactly. You're going to empower the violent organized crime. You're going to empower terrorism. You know, that's all you're going to do. You're not going to solve the issue of violence in a society. I mean, that's an issue that's been existing. I mean, people would argue that it's part of human nature to be violent. You're not going to solve violence with a law. There's just no getting around that. Just like you're not going to solve addiction with a law. There's just the anyone saying that they're going to solve this kind of problem with gun laws. I mean, they're either smoking a pipe or they're just lying to you or they're distracting you. I mean, that's all there is to it. Hillary Clinton coming out and saying, look, we're going to ban guns. That's what we got to do. Elect me. She's either full of shit or she's just trying to distract you, because everyone and their mother knows that that's not going to solve the issue. I mean, everybody knows that. Anyone with common sense knows that's not going to happen. So, I mean, that's just a non-starter. But, you know, these politicians are going to do what they're going to do, and they found an opportune time to push their gun control stuff. I mean, that's what they're going to do. So, you know, these terror attacks – and I used to think before I really started doing research and finding out, like, why terror attacks happen and what's going through their minds and why they carry out these kind of attacks, it just didn't make any sense, because it's like, well, if these guys attack us, well, obviously we're going to bomb them. And you know, if you're thinking like with common sense, it's like you wouldn't think that ISIS actually wants to get bombed, you know. And it's kind of like when they, you know, that whole debacle where they chopped off where they cut the American journalist's throat. And then that's when Obama decided that we were going to start bombing them and stuff. You know, you wonder, it's like, well, why would they do this kind of stuff, you know, when they know damn well the reaction is going to be us bombing them? Because you would think that they wouldn't want to be bombed, but, you know, that's actually not the case. These guys actually do want to get bombed. And if you look at, like, Osama bin Laden, and of course there's all kinds of different theories about bin Laden and when did he actually die. And everyone knows that bin Laden was a creation of the United States government, at least, you know, dating back to the 80s when we were fighting against the Soviets, and he was a freedom fighter in Afghanistan at that time, backed by the CIA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I've seen the argument made that the terrorists won after 9/11 because of what the reaction was. And if you look at the debacle that the United States has now created in the Middle East, I mean, many people would argue that the war on terror has bankrupted the United States and made us insolvent. I mean, it's
and what terrorists won too, Nick, because I haven't seen us invade Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. You know, and that's not the only goal that terrorism has. I mean, it's not just trying to get us to overreact on foreign policy. That's definitely part of it. And in that aspect, you know, bin Laden won because he made us overreact. And now we've spent money that we don't have on foreign policy that didn't work. And now we're trapped in endless wars. I mean, these are the kind of wars, you know, in Afghanistan is a famous, like, graveyard for empires. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that brings empires to its knees. And in that sense, bin Laden actually accomplished his goal. He may have died. He's dead now. And, you know, he may not have had his, you know, whatever it was he was trying to do. But in the end, he won because he really ended up bankrupting the United States. But Claire, you've got a great article on the anti-media today about how we can go about not letting the terrorists win, because overreacting on foreign policy is just one aspect. I mean, the other aspect of it is all the stuff that goes on socially after a terrorist attack. And we've seen it go on in Paris and Brussels. And inevitably, it's probably going to take place here in the United States once again, like it did in 9/11. So your article, read this if you don't want the terrorists to win. You lay out kind of the mistakes that we've been making following these terrorist attacks. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we've been doing exactly what the terrorists want. Claire, can you tell us a little bit about this article?
Yeah, I mean, we overreact to any act of terrorism. I mean, we've already kind of established that the U.S. kind of manufactures terrorists by its foreign policy. So we know that. We know that our foreign policy is driving, you know, all sorts of extremism. And what happens is at home, like if there's an attack here or somewhere else, then not only, you know, do people kind of freak out and want to clamp down on this, that, and the other thing and tighten laws and, you know, increase scrutiny, but we tend to blame an entire religion for the actions of only a few people. And that's, I mean, that's largely obviously the case with Islam, but we do that with other religions too. But in this case, particularly, people, you know, you get like Trump's reaction, like ban all Muslims and, you know, a lot of Islamophobia after something like this. And that's exactly what, you know, these extremists, these terrorists really want us to do. Because then there's like a culture of bigotry that kind of naturally comes up and suspicion. And the people who are under the microscope in the society end up, you know, being kind of resentful and feeling like they don't fit in. And where they were normally moderates, you get people kind of actually turning to the extreme. We're just creating more terrorists this way. Our reaction like this by blaming a generalized religion and so oversimplifying the issue, this is the problem. I mean, this is going to perpetuate the cycle to no end. Like, until we stop doing that, this is going to continue.
Claire, you reference a really great article by Dan Sanchez in your piece today on the anti-media regarding ISIS's war on the gray zone. And I would argue that Trump is also carrying out this war. But basically, the gray zone is the part of it's basically where civilization lives, and it's the areas where all these different people from different backgrounds, different religions, different races, they all intermix. They do business. They hang out. They conversate. They have friends that are, you know, you may have a person that's a Muslim that has a Christian friend or a Jewish person with Muslim friends, and it goes across.
Previously
all kinds
known
of,
as life is normal, like.
Exactly.
That would be like all of us just living life as normal.
Exactly. And so these terror attacks, I mean, one of the goals, and in fact, ISIS has actually stated this in some of their like manifestos, that they actually want to get rid of this zone of society where there's like this intermingling between Muslims and Christians and races and all these different people that come together to conduct business and create friendships and have conversations and create families and that kind of thing. I mean, ISIS is trying to create the extreme polarization of society where every religion is separated and the races are separated, and Muslims and Christians have so much distrust between each other that they don't even intermingle, you know, and that's exactly what ISIS is trying to accomplish. And when these terror attacks take place, when people automatically revert to Islamophobia and condemning all Muslims for the act of one idiot or one asshole or whatever you want to call this guy, and when people say, you know what, like all Muslims are the problem because of this one guy that did this, well, we're actually doing the work that ISIS is trying to accomplish. I mean, we're doing the work for them, and that's exactly kind of the point that your article makes.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're doing. We are creating more terrorism and more terrorists by doing this, by falling in line exactly how, you know, it's expected that we will, because we do this. Our society tends to polarize after events like the attack in Orlando. I mean, it happens over and over and over again. It happened after 9/11, and it just keeps happening again and again and again. And it's pushing away this kind of zone of normalcy, really. You know, life as it was no longer exists when everybody's suspicious of every neighbor and every action and is more than willing to clamp down on laws and, you know, have, what was it, Cruz or somebody was talking about having patrols in Muslim neighborhoods. And, I mean, it's like absurd. Of course, we're doing the work of the terrorists for them.
you know,
we're doing what we did before World War II.
What do you mean?
Dude, the internment camps, I mean, they're just around the corner.
I agree with you. I was talking to a friend today about that, and you know, if this kind of stuff continues, it wouldn't be that far off for a Trump. And believe me, this kind of attack, it really does help Trump. And I think if Alex Jones wasn't on Trump's balls so much, he'd probably be saying that Trump was behind this false flag. But this kind of thing really does benefit a candidate like Trump, who is supposedly the toughest on radical Islam, and you know, Obama's already kind of Obama's already like replying to what Trump is saying. Clinton's already replying to Trump was saying. I mean, she already said, I'm not afraid to say radical Islam. Trump says, I'm afraid to say it, but I'm saying it. I mean, Trump's already dictating the conversation here. And so this radicalization of the Trump camp is already going on. And as Claire's article kind of points out, is the more people fall into this Islamophobia stuff, the more that we're going to push regular Muslims, which it makes up 99.99% of them, we're going to push them towards ISIS. If the more Islamophobic Western civilization gets, the more the regular everyday Muslims that live within these Western nations are going to be pushed into the extreme, because they're going to be victimized by, you know, Islamophobia, racism.
Nick, this is exactly what happened prior to World War II again, where Jewish business owners, Jewish people in academia were basically starting to be reviled. And as a result, Judea, people can look this up, declared war against Germany in 1933, meaning a culture declared war against a country. I mean, how close are we to that right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of similarities going on between now and the previous two world wars, and we're on the doorstep right now of a grand conflict. I mean, there's already so many wars, small wars going on between countries. Claire actually wrote an article last week about how there's only 10 countries left in the world that aren't at war right now. I mean, it's crazy. The world's already at war. It's not officially world war yet because there's no huge one big conflict. But all these countries are going to war with each other, and different conflicts, internal conflicts, and
or themselves, right? I mean, Venezuela is on the brink.
The world's in utter chaos right now, man. You know, and this old system is really leading to this old imperialist. I don't know what to call this system. I mean, people call it capitalism, people call it imperialism, people call it communism. I mean, so many different words to describe what's going on right now.
Deep state, man.
Yeah, it's just the oligarchy that's been persisting throughout civilized man, I guess you can call it. It's just collapsing, and it's just causing a bunch of hardship for people all over the world. And it's, you know, not a good scenario. But you know, what can we do? And I'm going to throw this question over to the panel. And if anybody wants to call in, we're not taking any trolls tonight. But if you want to call in and actually add to this discussion, the number is 718-717-8296. We'll get to you. If you get on the line, make sure you keep your mic muted. We'll get to you by your area code. I'm going to go around the table here. What can we do to you know, reduce this terrorism stuff? And this is a huge question. So let me first throw it over to DB.
I guess we got to change the enemy to one of the people versus those that are the controllers. And that's like the last one left. And it's for all the marbles, which is scary. That's the only thing left to do, man, because otherwise the powers that be will manipulate us till our very end, if we allow it to happen. So we talk about government, trying to change government, trying to self-govern, but I mean, we got to take down the apparatus at its core somehow. I don't know how that happens though, but Jake's probably on the forefront of that one. It's going to a hacker's realm soon. Maybe that's where we can equal the playing field.
How am I on the forefront? What?
Well, Jake,
you know a lot about tech, Jake. That's what I mean.
I mean, not really. I know about some internet stuff, but I was gonna agree with you that, and this is my answer, is that the way to do it is that we have to keep the internet as free as possible, and we have to keep pushing as hard as we can online, because the internet is, these channels of information right now are what are going to enable us to break down the veil that for so many centuries and millennia have stopped us from being able to see what the oligarchs are doing. And now we're able to see that, and that's why the world is collapsing very quickly. It's happening so quickly that things are colliding at a much faster rate, and they're counting on that chaos to stop us from connecting the dots. But the information's right there in front of us, so as long as we stay organized and keep our eye on the information, eventually they won't be able to keep hiding their games from us.
Great point, man. And you know, I have to agree with you there, but also we got to keep in mind the internet is a double-edged sword, you know, and I see a lot of like Islamophobia being perpetuated online, and a lot of just misinformation, dude, like completely bogus stuff. I mean, there's a couple of sites that get a lot of people reading them, like yournewswire.com and, you know, a bunch of like just really, I don't know, right-wing lunatic websites and stuff. Like Trump reads this crap and he like repeats it because it resonates with people. And then, you know, there's a bunch of like, you know, stuff on the internet that is just like shilling for Hillary Clinton, like Blue Nation Review, that's kind of masquerades as independent news and stuff like that.
What about the thousands of troll accounts on Twitter that all said the same thing at the same time?
Yeah,
that DB, that was an awesome.
There was that from you know, I think that was for Trump, right? There was Trump had like a Twitter troll army. Hillary Clinton has a super PAC that's bankrolling a social media army for her. You know, so you know, the thing about the internet is it's so amazing because the information is relatively liberated, but then we also have to be careful because all kinds of misinformation gets mixed in with the legitimate stuff. And I mean, even us, you know, I have to admit that we've made mistakes and we've reported falsely, you know, on several occasions, very rarely, but I mean, it happens, you know. And we always, if we do mess up, we retract it and we issue, you know, issue some kind of statement about it. But I mean, it happens. The best of news outlets are going to make mistakes and all. But some of these news outlets are literally making a killing off of just reporting misinformation and bullshit. And so we have to be very kind of vigilant about what we read and how we do our research online. And you know, we try to be very good about vetting our information on the anti-media, but there's other people that you may think are relatively, you know, reliable that are simply aren't. So you got to be really careful. And the internet is such an amazing utopia of information that, you know, there's always going to be people in there trying to mess it up. And you know, that's just something to keep an eye on. I think we're actually, I know a few of us have been talking about putting an article together about some of the websites to avoid. We have a great article that's picking back up some steam on the anti-media because of this viral meme that we posted about how the media, like Manny was mentioning at the beginning of the show, how the media is like manipulating people into being afraid of like the transgender people in the bathroom. And then it's like, well, we're afraid of Muslims. And then Muhammad Ali dies and it's like, oh my God, Muhammad Ali is awesome. We like this Muslim guy. And then, you know, all of a sudden now it's like, we were afraid of transgender people last week. And now this week it's like solidarity with the gay people, you know, the LGBT community. Because, you know, they all got gunned down by this Muslim and now we hate Muslims again, you know. And so, you know, the media is really strong with just, I don't know if it's just distracting people or misdirecting our anger, because that's really what it is. I mean, like I said, the two prevailing arguments right now is ban guns and ban Muslims. This is coming from Trump and from Hillary and then all the way down the pyramid through the media outlets that kind of support these two separate narratives. That's really the driving force behind this narrative. And, you know, we're one of
that sounds like a horrible combo.
It really does, right? It's an assault on the First and Second Amendment. I mean, these are the two people running for the highest office in the United States.
They're all disarm and piss off a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, let's start banning religions and let's start banning guns. It's like, let's assault the first two amendments on the books that created this country, and these are the people running for the highest office. I mean, just think about that. That's insane. That's unbelievable. It's crazy.
I want to answer the question you asked earlier, Nick.
Go ahead, Manny.
The solution. Basically, to me, it's all very easy. There's two solutions. I always tell people, don't let politicians divide us. Don't let religion divide us. And definitely, do not fear each other because we come in different flavors. Or we happen to be, you know, basically different than you are and whatever and stuff like that. Because the people that sometimes you fear the most are the people that are probably better. You know, you shouldn't fear. You should fear somebody else. Sometimes the people that we trust the most are the people we should fear the most. Like, for an example is this. You have this, we'll talk about transgender season, the wrestling and stuff like that. But yet that kid that, you know, got 6 months, for raping this woman and stuff like that, and the judge, you know, should be actually taken off the bench because, you know, he says, oh, we can't ruin his life and all this, and all this white privilege and stuff like that. So we got to stop fearing each other and stop, you know, dividing ourselves because, like you said earlier, we'll be doing the terrorist work thing, you know, a great article, by the way, by Claire and stuff like that. And it's just, we need to question everything. We cannot take everything for, you know, basically, you know, just because somebody said so. Look into it, question everything. I always question everything and look at the whole picture.
Yeah, man, great point. I mean, as you mentioned, it's like everyone's like, oh, yeah, we got to be worried about transgender people. They're going to come rape our kids in the bathrooms and stuff. It's like, well, you know, actually, if you look at the statistics, it's very, very, very unlikely that a transgender person is going to sexually assault someone in a bathroom. And then you got this kid, which I don't even know the school. I know he's a college white kid that is a swimmer, and he raped a woman, and he's got, you know, he got sentenced to 6 months in jail, and he's only going to serve 3. I mean, they want to create this law in North Carolina about transgender bathrooms and all that crap. Well, at the same time, the justice system lets people get off basically unpunished. I mean, 3 months in jail for raping someone, to me, that's like a non-punishment. I mean, it's just like it blows my mind to think about the crap that people care about, and then people try to make excuses for this kid or just don't give a shit about, you know, this occasion. Or you know, this crime that he committed. So yeah, it's hypocritical to say the least. Claire, I want to come back to you now. I think you're the last one on the panel. You know, what do we do? And I know your article is all about this, but I guess, you know, what's the strongest point you can make about how do we prevent this kind of attack from happening again?
I think there are two things. The first is, like Manny was saying, I mean, we cannot allow ourselves to succumb to needless and unjustifiable fear. There's no point in doing that. But even further than that, I think the most important thing is to remember, as censorship is increasing at a very rapid rate, and, you know, our rights are kind of being signed away, like, at an alarming rate, free speech and the right to offend people, no matter what your opinion, is really more important than anything right now. Because once you start to lose that ability to speak freely, or, you know, freedom of expression, all of those, it's like the most imperative, crucial issue that we could possibly hold on to at this point. Because once we lose the ability to transmit credible, reliable information and to give opinions about, you know, narratives that might be questionable, as in the case of Orlando, that's when everything goes downhill. Because that's when, I mean, that's like the internet age version of book burning. So we have to be really, really careful and vigilant about that.
And great. We have to worry about the Ministry of Truth now.
Yeah. Yeah, coming soon. We'll talk about that as well. But I wanted to mention one of the things that you said in what I was saying about, like, disinformational agents out there and, the, you know, disguising themselves as alternative media. I mean, you didn't hear me say, hey, you know what, we need to petition Congress to ban misinformation online. I think it's a destructive force. I think misinformation and crappy clickbait and Islamophobia and hate mongers and fear mongers, like, for instance, with Alex Jones, I mean, I think there are destructive forces out there, but I don't think that we need the government to come in and ban them and say, hey, you guys can no longer conduct Islamophobic misinformation. I think there's a better way of going about it, and it's through the information itself and through communicating and through providing better alternatives, or providing manuals for people who can, you know, pick up an article from us that can give them a guide to where they can, you know, where they can look to for reliable information throughout the political spectrum, be it left, central, middle, anarchist leaning, or whatever, or what's bullshit. We don't need laws in place to say, hey, you guys just can't print false shit no more that you can just make up out of thin air. You have to actually, you know, have truthful information. Where do you draw the line? You know, and then what? Do you ban opinion? Do you ban speculation? You know, and a lot of the work we do is speculative. A lot of the work we do is opinion, you know. And so, the answer is not to ban violence, because violence is already banned. Murdering people is already illegal. You know what I mean? Killing people because they're gay, or killing people because they're not Muslim, or killing people because they're not Christian, or whatever the case may be, that whatever the next shooting or terror attack or mass shooting or school shooting or theater, whatever it is that happens next, those crimes are already illegal. Putting more laws on the books is not going to fix it. I mean, the issue that we're dealing with here is much more complicated than passing laws. I mean, it's societal. And I made a status update a long time ago on Facebook, and that got a lot – it resonated well with a lot of people. And it had to do not with radical Islamic terrorism, but it had to do with when these white guys go and shoot up theaters and stuff like that, you know, which is a pretty common thing. In fact, you know, right-wing extremism is actually the most common terrorism in the United States, much more common than Muslim terror attacks. But one of the things that one of the arguments I made, and everybody's got a different argument, you know, it's like, well, if there weren't gun-free zones, well, then someone would have been there that had a gun that could shoot somebody down if they were, you know, coming in to shoot people. And then there's like the mental health argument where, everyone that shoots up stuff is on psychotropic drugs. And I'm not disputing any of these, arguments, but I think that they're kind of secondary to the argument I'm about to make, which is that the United States is a very violent culture, man, and disregarding the religious factors behind any of these attacks, you know, the U.S. is we've been programmed from day one, from the moment we're kids. I mean, we're programmed to accomplish things through violence, because our government. I mean, just to be very plain with it. The United States is an empire, and we survive through violence. We have the most military bases throughout the world. We've got the highest military expenditures. We've got the biggest budget. We've got we're occupying the most countries. We've got the most machinery. We've got the most ships. We've got the most planes. I mean, you name it. We've got the most stuff for killing people. And all of our media, all of our pop culture and stuff, it creates an environment for our government to get away with using all this stuff and to go and overthrow countries like Iraq or Libya or Syria or, you know, Somalia that we're working on right now, all these different countries, Yemen. I mean, we live in a culture where violence is promoted because our government is very, very violent, and our cops and everything about our government is very violent. And they use violence to fix all of our problems, just like with this terror attack. I mean, I'm sure in a couple days, Obama's going to come on TV and he's going to announce that we're going to be upping our, you know, military involvement in Iraq or in Syria or whatever. I mean, you know that's going to happen. It's inevitable. And so we live in a society, we live in a culture where violence is the answer. You know, everybody says, oh, well, violence isn't the answer. Well, don't tell that to the U.S. government, because violence is basically their answer for everything. Addiction, throw them in jail. I mean, that's a form of violence. Terrorism, drop more bombs. You know, somebody – we don't agree with the government, overthrow it. You know, we live in a culture where violence is the solution, and it's taught to us not by these radical extremists, not by some religious group. It's taught to us by the government. Everybody – when you're having a bad time and no one gets along with you, or you're getting picked on in school or whatever, you go and you do a Columbine. You go shoot up a school. You go do a mass shooting. This is the culture that we're being taught. If you're not – if life's not treating you well, well, then solve it violently. You know, this is the underlying cultural issue which makes America one of the most violent developed countries in the world. We've got more gun issues, more shootings than any other country in the developed world. And people wonder why. Well, it's the government. And it's the same government that comes along every time there's some kind of mass shooting, and they tell you that they've got the solution, that they're going to fix it for you. And it just, to me, it's a huge slap in the face, because they're the ones that created this problem. And then they come along and pretend they got the answers. Go ahead.
I want to mention something since you're talking about the subject. It's like, for instance, all these jealous people, for instance, you know, we have this two young women, you know, different. They actually ended up getting scholarships because their grades were 4 point something, almost a 5.0 and stuff like that, you know, stuff like that. But they confessed at, you know, at the graduation, some of their friends knew that she was undocumented, but most of them didn't, you know, and stuff like that. And she confessed. And then you got this reporter all of a sudden says, oh, I didn't think Mexicans were that smart, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, you have this type of hate out there, stuff like that, you know. Then you got this killer that just basically killed a young lady with a beautiful voice and happened to have a voice that was a voice for the animals. I mean, a beautiful voice. She was on the actual show, The Voice, and stuff like that. Gunned down in Florida after signing autographs by this killer that was basically after her, you know, how do you say in English? He was stalking her and stuff like that. Young girl just got killed, you know, and singing and making a difference with her voice for the animals and stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah, man. We live in a culture where violence solves everything. That's America, dude. And when you have an empire, you got to build that kind of consent for violence throughout the entire, you know, your entire experience, whether it's through the culture, whether it's through the media, whether it's through the education system.
And I just wanted to quickly put in here, once you start an empire, once you go through with Manifest Destiny and try to build a railroad to the edge of the earth, which we did, there's no stopping an empire. The empire only grows or it's only destroyed. That's the only two options. So right now we've hit a wall with Russia and with China. We can't grow anymore. And if we do grow more, we control the entire northern hemisphere and the rest of the world will be ours soon. So like, that's where we're at, man. We're at the do or die of Pax Americana.
And it's not looking like we're going to succeed on this.
But how do we know? We don't really know what we have in our military. That's what freaks me out.
Yeah, you never know until it's...
Well, and NATO is amassing troops. They've sent out battalions on to the Balkans and stuff now, too, surrounding Russia even more. So this is not looking good either.
You know, and the other side of this, like shifting away from like the domestic cultural things that are going on here. The media is you know, kind of going after Trump because they want to call Trump Islamophobic and stuff, and he is. I mean, they're not wrong on that. But the issue here is that the media really drives this Islamophobic agenda without being like open about it, you know, and they want to demonize everybody in the Middle East without openly saying, yeah, you know what, you know, screw them, let's just ban them, and they're lesser than us. They do it in a more subtle kind of way, but over time it really builds up this idea that Muslim or Arab people or brown people in general are kind of lesser human beings and aren't as human as, you know, your average American. This kind of mentality has been built up throughout the decades through our media and stuff, and it's been really effective and it worked, and people really don't give a shit about people dying in the Middle East. I mean, thousands of refugees have drowned in the Mediterranean trying to flee Libya, which, you know, we helped destabilize and overthrow their government, and not a single fuck has been given. Like, I hate to say it that way, but that no one gives a shit about the Libyans dying in the Mediterranean Sea because their ships are sinking. Because we destabilized their government, no one gives a shit, you know, because they've been effectively dehumanized by the media over decades of propaganda. And all of a sudden Trump comes along and he just is outright and says it like blatantly. And he says, you know what? Muslims are bad people. They're all terrorists. We need to ban them from entering the country. And the media is like, oh, my God, we can't have Trump talking like this. This is ridiculous. Trump, you're a xenophobe, man. You're Islamophobic. But these same media outlets have been perpetuating this narrative that's been dehumanizing of Muslims and Arabs and brown people and black people for decades and decades and decades. And they act like it's just a normal thing. But when someone actually says it without just kind of insinuating it or subtly like implying that Muslims are inferior people, then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, we can't allow this to go on because they don't want their agenda being completely exposed. Like Trump, you know, Trump is like really showing his cards here. He's being plainly open about the narrative that's been going on, the dehumanization of Muslims and stuff. And that's the reason why it's actually working and why Trump is so goddamn popular. I never believed it would happen, but he is. Is because the media has been driving this narrative down people's throats for decades, and now Trump is just, you know what? He's like, screw it. I'm just going to say what they've been insinuating for decades and decades. I'm just going to say it, and it's working. And Trump, especially with if this kind of stuff continues, this terror attacks, the longer it lingers in the media, the more it's going to help Trump. I mean, Trump, there's a very good chance he becomes the next president. At least he, you know, he'll probably win more votes than Hillary Clinton. There may be some fuckery involved that actually hands it over to her, but I think Trump is going to win more popular votes than she is. And it's only because, you know, this media narrative that now they're condemning Trump for what he's saying. They're the ones that have been perpetuating the same exact narrative for a very long time. And so I don't know. I just hope people will start realizing that. Trump is not anti-establishment. He is the most establishment guy out there. He's literally just saying what they've been trying to get you to think for a long time, and it's working.
Instead of being a puppet on a string, he's a puppet that's sitting on a hand.
I don't know. I don't know what to make of that one.
Well, I mean to say he enjoys it.
Yeah, he does. He loves it. He loves the attention.
There's nothing wrong with being a $5 billion puppet, right?
On a side note, Trump made an interesting move today on Facebook. He announced that he was decredentialing Washington Post from his events. So the Washington Post is no longer going to be allowed inside of Trump events because he says they're untruthful in their coverage and that they don't cover correctly and that they're inaccurate. I unfortunately have to agree with Trump on this one because the Washington Post ran a headline that said Trump more or less what they said was Trump accuses Obama of being involved in the Orlando shooting, which definitely is not what Trump said. And I don't know if you guys have been watching the coverage on Washington Post, which is supposed to be one of these unbiased, you know, news outlets like New York Times and stuff, which is clearly not the case. Washington Post has had a vendetta against Trump, man, and also against Bernie Sanders. I mean, if you look at it from a kind of a atmospheric perspective, you can see that Washington Post has actually been shilling for Hillary Clinton for like day one. They've been going hard for Hillary Clinton.
They hate Sanders because of his proposal to make Washington, D.C. stop being an incorporated city state and become an actual state, where people are going to be able to vote their representation. It's pretty mind-blowing, right?
Yeah, and so there's been a, you know, if you look at a lot of this kind of what I would call quote-unquote establishment media, Washington Post, New York Times, CBS, ABC, to a lesser extent Fox, because everyone knows Fox is on the other side shilling for the other guy, there's been a huge Hillary Clinton bias on this side of the spectrum, and Washington Post is very, very blatant about it. And like I said, I hate to agree with Trump, but he's right. Washington Post is very much misrepresenting Trump, and there's plenty to go after Trump about. Trump's a horrible candidate. He says a bunch of crappy stuff. He's got a less than shiny business record. He's got the lawsuit on his hands. There's plenty of things to go after Trump about. Washington Post is just goes overboard exaggerating, saying Trump said Obama was involved in the shooting, and you know, this is pretty funny to see a national candidate say that the Washington Post isn't allowed in his events anymore. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. I thought that was pretty interesting. So a couple other things I wanted to talk about tonight. A new poll out, I think I saw this on the New York Post, I'm not sure, was talking about how Clinton has now slipped into third place with independents. And so this is a very interesting headline because it turns out that Gary Johnson, which is the libertarian candidate for president, has now pulled ahead of Hillary Clinton with independent voters. So that's a really interesting perspective, and I wanted to bring Jake into this because Jake, we didn't get you on the radio last week, but you had a really good article. In fact, it was our top article of the week last week, and it was the top article of the month. That talked kind of about the election and the whole Bernie Sanders phenomenon, how that's playing out. And I know you and me have talked about the third parties and the independent parties and stuff that are running. Over on the New York Post, there's this article about a recent poll where it shows that GOP candidate Donald Trump led among independents in the poll with 32% of the vote, followed by Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico and libertarian candidate for president, who got 23%. Hillary Clinton has now fallen to 22% among independent voters. And now one important stat to keep in mind here is that independents now make up the greatest voting bloc in the United States. In fact, they make up over 40%, and the Democrats have somewhere around 30, and the Republicans have somewhere around 25. So, I mean, the independents are now outnumbering either one of the parties individually. And to see that Gary Johnson, an independent candidate, is actually polling higher than Hillary Clinton, one of the major candidates, is a very telling sign. Jake, what do you make of this?
Which part? Hillary Clinton polling low?
Well, Clinton is starting to poll really low with independents, and Gary Johnson is now that he's starting to get included in some of the polling, is pulling ahead of Hillary Clinton on the independent vote.
Yeah, well, I just think that people are really desperate for a third party candidate. I don't think the appetite has ever been more than it is right now. And because the libertarians are kind of, you know, positioned better than, say, a Green Party candidate like Jill Stein, Gary Johnson's going to get a lot of votes. We have the two most disliked candidates in history running against each other. So it's a ripe time to get fourth parties in there. And I think it's pretty possible that in the next presidential election, we'll see a lot more, a lot bigger chance for this to happen. I'm very curious to see what Bernie Sanders is going to do post whatever's going to happen when he drops out. I mean, I'm sure he's going to push for major reforms on the platform and whatnot. But I mean, come on, we all know that, Hillary Clinton, the Democrats, will just be like, okay. Oh, you want free college? Interesting. Okay, And then they're not going to do anything. They're not. But moving forward after that, is Bernie going to get pissed off? I mean, are they going to piss him off and push him over to maybe teaming up with Jill Stein? I don't think it's incomprehensible. In fact, last week I was tantalized by this idea of if Mitt Romney ran a third party run to disrupt the Trump movement, and Bernie Sanders ran a third party to disrupt the Hillary movement, then you would have checks and balances. You would have two weights that would counterbalance the lesser of two evil pitfall. So, what if they even worked together on it? Like, what if they said, okay, we're going to go in and we're both going to challenge our own parties?
We're going to have presidents.
That could be an incredible I wish to God it would happen.
That would be really interesting. And I'm curious to see what Sanders does too. There's no chance in hell that Sanders is going to just break off and run a third party a run if it's going to be, if it's going to be where he's going to be blamed for Hillary Clinton losing to Trump. And on the other side of the spectrum, I think there's a good chance that the neoconservative Republican Party, which isn't exactly Trump's wheelhouse, would run a third party run with the sole purpose of actually making Trump lose so they could have Hillary Clinton, because I think everybody knows that on everything except for social issues, Hillary Clinton is a neoconservative. So I think that a lot of the neocon establishment would actually prefer Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump because he's kind of a populist that, you know, he's just one of these candidates that it's unpredictable. No one knows what he's going to do, how he's going to do it. But I think, Jake, you made a good point there. If that there was a viable alternative being put up against the Republicans, that would open the door for Bernie Sanders to put a viable alternative up against the Democrats. So I guess we're gonna have to wait and see how all that stuff plays out. I don't know. You know, very interesting debate. We've got a caller on the line now from 917 area code. Welcome to the Anti-Media Radio. What do you make of this election, and what do you think is going to happen? Oh, 917 dropped. You don't have to be when you call in. You don't have to be nervous. We're not going to, you know, be mean to you or anything like that. You can call in. We'll keep it civil. We're not going to, unless you're a troll. Can't make any promises to the trolls. Anyway, a lot of stuff we have up on the Anti-Media. Great video today by AJ Plus. I'm sure everybody saw this. This thing came up like earlier this morning. It was posted by AJ Plus, and I think it has like 20 million views or something crazy. But it's a former CIA agent that basically spoke to AJ Plus, which is a spinoff of Al Jazeera. It's kind of like their social media video platform. But it's a former CIA agent that really wants to change the conversation about terrorism. Well-timed video. But one of the quotes I want to bring up from this woman, whose name is what is it? God, I can't. Something Fox, whatever. Amaryllis. I don't know how to pronounce it. Amaryllis Fox. If I learned one lesson from my time with the CIA, it's this: everybody believes they are the good guy. In the process of getting her CIA rolled back, AJ Plus reports, or she's in the process of getting her CIA, whatever, her cover rolled back. But I mean, it's true. Everybody thinks they're the good guys. If you're in Syria right now and you're affiliated with ISIS, I mean, you think you're doing God's work. If you're an American right now and you're like, yeah, go bomb ISIS, you think you're doing the right thing. And it's just a matter of perspective. It's very much a subjective issue. I mean, who's right, who's wrong? Everybody thinks they're right. When someone kills someone, they're probably in their head, they're thinking they're doing the right thing. This lunatic that shot up the people in the club probably thought he was doing the right thing. And when we go and we starve 500,000 kids in Iraq, we think we're doing the right thing, you know? And so everybody thinks they're doing God's work out there, and everyone's just hurting each other. And creating more and more of this cycle that is just creating more and more violence.
It's creating a buildup, Nick, right? It's creating a buildup, and unfortunately when it hits this time in our history, it's with weapons that we can't imagine. That's what sucks.
Exactly. Exactly, man. So this article, it's on the Anti-Media. You got to watch the video yourself because this is, you know, right from the mouth of a former CIA agent who has a lot of insight into this topic of terrorism and, you know, what's going on overseas and all the operations and stuff. Title of the article, former CIA agent to Americans, time to talk about what's really causing terrorism. And really, she's trying to change the conversation about, you know, what's behind the motives behind terrorism. And that's the biggest, you know, that's the biggest conversation that we can have right now, is not banning guns or banning Muslims, because none of that shit is going to work. It's all a distraction. And not only that, but it's an outright assault on the Bill of Rights, which I'm working on an article right now, you know, kind of talks about how the Bill of Rights is not taken seriously anymore by the government. And obviously proof in the pudding here is that people running for president are trying to wage war on the first two amendments. There's a reason why they're one and two, because they're pretty important. The people running for president right now are waging a war on the first two amendments, and that is not how we fix this problem. There are definitely better ways. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show. That's tonight's episode. Make sure you catch us tomorrow and 5 days a week. Same place, same time here on UCY.TV or theantimedia.org/radio. Peace out. Yo, here we go through the stereo.